Right, we're coming back to our study here tonight in Isaiah chapter 46. And we come to what is a seemingly difficult passage, but when you get over the hump of the first verse or two, you will find that this is a really blessed, wonderful chapter. Now, our news has been filled with pulling down statues. In this chapter, you will see that there is the pulling down of idols. Now, they are two very different things. When people pull down statues, they are pulling down people's heroes, and they are pulling down markers of history. When God pulled down the Chaldean idols, and he destroyed them, and their conquerors carried off these idols, that was a righteous work. Because God hates idolatry, and he will never bless it. Now, the first name in chapter 46, 1, is Bel. And that's simply another form of the name Baal. And this was the Chaldean god. You know the name Belshazzar. Well, that has their heathen idol god built right in that very name. And then also you have Nebo, and you think of Nebuchadnezzar. That was a name that was the Chaldean idol god, and Nebuchadnezzar was given that name. Now, there's all kinds of information about how these particular heathen idols took on different names when the Persians conquered the Chaldeans, later the Greeks, and so on. And we'll not dig into all of that tonight. But what is being spoken here is the rooting out of idolatry. And the problem of men in every situation in life is the lack of the knowledge of God. As soon as man walks away from God, denying him, closing his ears to God's word, he immediately descends into the pit of trouble every time. And you can see that in the Bible, character after character, nation after nation, and we see it today. People who say there is no God, you have the evolutionary story, the philosophies of men, the atheism, and then there's immorality, and now there's anarchy and rebellion to all manner of authority. And of course, it's blindness that turns men to idolatry, and it leads to chaos. Now, need we comment on the activities that are going on at this time? It is plain godlessness. It is the attitude, there is no God, I'm not accountable, I will be God to myself. And really, it reminds me of the days of Noah. And Noah's times were times of anarchy and violence and dreadful fear. And the big comment on it in Genesis 6:5 is that the heart of man was totally turned away from God. Man's imagination was only evil continually. And when God is ruled out, there is nothing but trouble. Now, this book of Isaiah is really a revelation of God, and it calls Israel back to their God to trust in him. And you'll see this in this chapter, verse 3, "Hearken unto me, O house of Jacob, and all the remnant of the house of Israel, which are born by me from the belly." And then you have in verse 12 again, "Hearken unto me, ye stout-hearted." Now, that's not just to listen, but it is to obey. It is to put into practice what we learn about the Lord. And of course, that's true godliness, not only to learn about God, but to live according to the true knowledge of the Lord. And in this passage, God is calling and he's reasoning with Israel, with his people, to trust in him and not in idols. And I want to give you a number of headings that will sort of map out the chapter for us tonight. Verses 1 and 2, idols are a total failure. They are pulled down and they're carried off and they don't deliver. Then verses 3 and 4, that God is the God of lifelong care, from the womb to the tomb. That's verses 3 and 4. And then verses 5 to 7, God is the God of unparalleled deity. There's none like him. There is no other like him. And then verses 8 and 9, God is the God of history. Remember, it says in verse 8, and again in verse 9. And then in verses 10 and 11, he is the God of prophecy. And each of these things are reasons to put our trust in the Lord and believe in him. And I hope you will tonight. I hope that you will come in prayer and put your confidence and your hope in the Lord. So let's look at these one by one. Firstly, idols are a total failure. They are absolutely without hope. Now you'll notice in verse 2, they stoop. That means they're torn down. They're unable to bear their own weight. And they bow down together. They could not deliver the burden, but themselves are gone into captivity. And of course, what a heavy weight they are. And poor donkeys and mules and other beasts are made to carry these dead weight gods of stone and metal. And we're told there in verse 1 that beasts and upon the cattle, your carriages were heavy loaden, they are a burden to the very beast. And so these idols are just, they're just material things that are a burden. And they do not deliver. They do not deliver. Verse 2, they could not deliver the burden. And you contrast that with verse 4, where it says, I will bear, even I will carry, and will deliver you. And so, put your trust in the Lord. Idols will never deliver you. Idols will never help. They are useless and vain. But if you put your trust in the Lord, he will be your helper. He will deliver. Now, this lifelong care of the Lord, you'll see in verses 3 and 4, and it truly is from the womb to the tomb. And it says, O house of Jacob, and all the remnant of the house of Israel, which are born by me from the belly, which are carried from the womb. And we can only think that before the infant is born, while the infant is still in the mother's womb, is God's care, God's protection. And right through to old age is mentioned in verse 4. And even to your old age, I am he, and even to whorehairs will I carry you. So there's lifelong security from the womb to the end of life, and the Lord will carry us. And here is God's wonderful promise. Idols can't do that. Idols can do nothing, but God will be with us all the way from the beginning of life right unto the end. And then also in verses 12 to 13, you'll see that this is the final pitch. This is the application. This is his call to hearken and to listen. And in verse 13, I bring mine ear, my righteousness, it shall not be far off, and my salvation shall not tarry, and I will place salvation in Zion for Israel, my glory. So God will help. He will deliver. He will come to the aid of his people. And for that reason, we will turn to him and trust in him. Now, verses 5 to 7, God is the God of unparalleled deity. To whom will you liken me and make me equal? God will have no other God to compete with him. It would be a lie, because there is but one living and true God. Now, for a deity to be a deity, he has to have the characteristics of deity. And of course, God is God because he's the creator. He hung the whole world upon nothing. He hangs it and he holds it in place. What do idols do? They've created nothing. They have helped in no way. They have no power. They cannot hear. They cannot speak. And of course, they cannot answer. An idol is a figment of man's imagination. They just carve it into a shape, fall down and worship it, and it is not a deity at all. There is only one true and living God. And of course, that's sound theology. You can't have two gods competing. That's impossible. There is only one living and true God, and he is the one whom we come to worship and serve tonight. What a great thing. And we should be thanking the Lord that we're not bowing down to idols. Do we think that we're beyond that? Left to our own blindness, we might. But in grace, the Lord has revealed himself as the unparalleled divine God of glory. Now, verses 8 and 9, you have another reason to turn to God, because he's the God of history. Remember this and show yourselves men. Bring it again to mind, O ye transgressors. And then in verse 9, remember the former things of old. Now, God does not erase history. That seems to be the thing that people want to do today. They want to get rid of history. They want to start into something that is just free and has man's own empty way. But here God calls us to remember. Check out the things that I have done, God is saying in that passage. Because without him, well, there would be no world, there would be no life, there would be no history at all. And that includes the creation, the fall, the flood, Abraham, the 400 years in Egypt, the Passover, the Red Sea experience, 40 years in the wilderness, God feeding the people with manna, quail, water out of the rock, a clouded pillar by day to shade them from the sun, and the pillar of fire by night to direct their ways. What miracles God has performed for his people, and then by Joshua brought them into the land of Israel. And God is the God of history. And we are to rejoice tonight that he is writing history, and he is in the midst of every great event in this world. These are all facts of God's power. And tonight, as we come to pray, we can rehearse them. We can say, Lord, you're the God who can do anything. You're the God who raises the dead, that has brought revival and reformation. These histories are reasons to pray and to seek his face. When we move on into verse 10, we find that God is also the God of prophecy. And it says, declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times, the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure. And this is really an exciting part. I was reading today, first thing this morning, Daniel chapter 2. The story of Nebuchadnezzar's dream, which he couldn't remember, and therefore his Chaldean wise men could not help him with, and so they called for Daniel, and Daniel gave him the dream that he had dreamed and the interpretation of that great image. And the head of gold that was interpreted by Daniel, he said, "That's you, Nebuchadnezzar, and your kingdom. Thou art the head of gold." And that was the Chaldean nation. And then he went on to say that the breast and the arms of silver, they were a different nation, which we now know to be the Medes and the Persians. The next part of the image was the belly and the thighs of brass, and that was the Greek Empire when Alexander conquered the world around 300 AD. Then followed by that were the legs of iron and the toes part iron, part clay. That was the Roman Empire. Now that's borne out in other scriptures, and that is well documented, and historians agree on that. But you think of the prophecy that is involved in that image. 500 years of history is involved in it, from one nation to the next, coming and going, and in the order in which Daniel interpreted it. And, of course, all with the goal, and you can read Daniel 2:45 and you'll get it, all with the goal that the Lord is going to build his kingdom. He was the stone cut out without hands. And in the great big picture of world history and prophecy is the Lord building his kingdom. Now that is staggering in every way you look at it. In the details, in the fact that it's given, first of all, to a heathen king, and then Daniel's in place to interpret it. And through that event, he is elevated, and even Nebuchadnezzar says that the God of Daniel is the God of gods. And God now reveals himself in such a way. And then all these historic events, they play out on the stage of world events. You couldn't even have dreamt it. Well, Nebuchadnezzar did. He did. And he didn't know what the dream was. But he was very, very happy to learn that he was the head of gold. And I think that's what prompted him to put up that image and have everyone to bow down to it. It really went to his head. That head went to his head, and he was moved by that. Now, God's the God of prophecy. What does that mean to us tonight? That he lifts up and he pulls down. He allows nations to rise and fall, and he's doing it in the world tonight. We are all perplexed by the madness that's going on in the world. Madness in this pandemic. Madness in politicians. Madness in anarchists that are pulling down statues and seeking to burn flags of their nation. And it's on our doorstep. And it affects people's attitudes. And of course, the whole humanistic education system has fed this. And we, in reaching people to lead them to Christ, find this current that's contrary to the work of God and to God's word. But yet, in it all, God shakes the nations that he might build his church in the midst of it. And his church, of course, is not bricks and mortar, but his redeemed, his blood-bought, whom he saves and he calls out, and he will bring them to himself. Now, in verse 11, you have a very strange reference here, calling a ravenous bird from the east, the man that executeth my counsel from a far country. That's Cyrus. That is that Persian king whom God raises up right at the end of Daniel's life, and he becomes the instrument of God to restore his people back to Jerusalem. And here, 100 years or more in advance, this revelation, this prophecy is put in writing in the book of Isaiah, so that those who were in the exile would read these words. What encouragement it would certainly bring to their hearts. And through these things, God says, "Hearken unto me, ye stout-hearted." And that, of course, is the Israelites who were so quick to run to idolatry, so quick to depart from the Lord, so quick to seek other gods and other ways. And tonight we need to pray earnestly that God will speak loudly to men and call them to himself and build his church. Just one final point at the end of the verse, and you'll notice, "I will place salvation in Zion for Israel, my glory." My glory. And that, of course, is what this world's all about. It's to build his church. It's to call out his people. It's to save his redeemed for his glory. For his glory. If you remember last week, that was one of the five on the checklist, is the prayer you're praying for God's glory. And we can add that in here tonight. And so, I trust that you will take to heart